Welcome to episode 56 of Extra Sequential, the comics manga, or as manga, manga. It's like Flash the Gordon villain. We are talking about comics and such. My name is Chris, and joining me on the virtual couch is the long-haired larrikeet, larrikin. Love to hate.
Shut up, hate. My name's Mladen. Oh, you know, come on. Let me just say my name. Get on with it.
Say my name.
I am in new surroundings of the northern suburbs tonight. It's very quiet up here.
It's good. That's what you want in your suburbs. And your women. Hey, there's no need for that.
You are a Christian man anyway.
Oh, good one. Today we are talking about comics that we want to see.
Yes, kind of dream projects, I guess. And maybe we both approached it. Or dreams can come true. There's that one. I'm sure there's many, many more.
Yes.
Get out of my dreams and into my car.
Oh, yes. Is that Billy Ocean or Lionel Richie?
Lionel Richie. No. Just saying Lionel Richie's name makes me think of that clay sculpture of his head that blind girl makes of him.
Oh, what song was that?
Hello.
From? Yes, that's it. It's me you're looking for. I can see it in your eyes. We've done a lot of singing today, and we're not even 5 minutes in.
It's to get the energy levels up. But, hey, you know, it's to be expected. We are talking about, well, I was looking at my little mini list, and it's all kind of projects I'd be excited to see.
Also, happy spring to you and all our listeners.
Except for those in the Northern Hemisphere.
Really? My geography and stuff's no good, so I'll trust you on this.
You seriously don't know how seasons work?
I don't know anything about the four seasons except that it's a hotel.
Oh.
So it's what, autumn?
Happy autumn to our Northern Hemisphere listeners.
Cool. Come down with that.
Okay. This is going nowhere. Let's get into the comic book news. So, Chris, it feels like it's been a quiet week for comic book news.
I don't have much.
Yeah, like the items that I've been sort of seeing on a topic that I just do not want to talk about anymore, which is the DC relaunch. And for people who've missed the last couple of shows and go, whoa, what's a DC relaunch? DC are starting all their numbering again from one, and they're kind of trimming off a lot of the backstory of their key characters to try and get new readers is the main thrust of it. So after September, which is when all the number ones come out, we can all stop talking about DC.
Well, the Justice League number one, which came out yesterday in America and England, has got pretty good reviews written by Geoff Johns and Jim Lee. I haven't read a bad review yet. So that's the first one, and it ties into how the Flashpoint, which is the alternate universe miniseries that DC are doing, it basically Flashpoint ends and Justice League number one starts the new DC Universe, as you mentioned. So they've both been out this week and have got good reviews. So I'll be picking out my copy tomorrow.
Ah, okay. So what are you saying? They're wrapping up Flashpoint in the first issue?
No, Flashpoint is the last issue, Flashpoint number five. Okay. And that basically explains
how it's going to... Okay, good. Because I was thinking, no way, that would be a bad idea to start the first issue of their clean slate reboot with a complicated explanation for the reboot.
Yes. If you're impatient, you can Google it and see it online. And Bleeding Cool has preview pages and whatnot of both those issues, but I recommend picking them up because, it's a huge week for DC. Let's talk about Brian Wood. You mentioned a couple of weeks ago that he's no longer working for DC.
Correct.
And so are you familiar with the latest news?
I am not, actually, so this will be a surprise for me just to quickly fill people in. Brian Wood is the author behind DMZ, Northlanders, and Demo, a whole bunch of other kind of, I guess he's got a sort of modern sort of touch with his writing. He's a really good writer. Anyway.
So he's now working for Marvel.
What?
They've just released a teaser image. It's basically a mysterious project with Wolverine involved somehow, and it's going to be launched next year. Basically, the teaser image just got Brian Wood Wolverine and six scratchy red claw marks on a black background. Also announced to Fan Expo Canada is that Alpha Flight, which is basically Canada's equivalent of X-Men, who have had their own series on and off for the last few years but have never reached the heights that the X titles have reached. That is an ongoing series, obviously announced in Canada to a much cheering from a Canadian, the Canadian readers there. So it was originally just going to be an eight-issue miniseries by Greg Pak and Fred Van Lent and artist Dale Eaglesham, who I'm a big fan of, does Green Lantern, Hulk, a bunch of other stuff over the years. So it's been quite successful, I guess. So they're all staying onto the series, and it'll now be an ongoing monthly series. So if you're fans of Alpha Flight, this be good news for you, and also good news if you're fans of Brian Wood.
Well, wow, those are two unexpected pieces of news for me.
I like to surprise you, and you think I think you'll find that I do it on a regular basis.
Well, it's not like you told Brian Wood what to do. You reading it out wasn't surprising. The move was surprising, Chris. Don't take credit for other people's shocking revelations. Brian, yeah, I'm a huge fan of Wood's. I'm interested. I don't know if I'll pick it up. I like his creator-owned stuff a lot, so I'll probably give it a read and be intrigued by both of those. For sure.
I know how much you love Wolverine.
Yeah. I just can't even
keep
muster
your enthusiasm to a minimum.
That's exactly it. I can't even fake the enthusiasm required.
You might have seen the pictures of the Superman relaunch currently filming in America of his full costume.
Yeah.
The red undies are definitely gone.
Okay.
And he's got, he doesn't have the yellow S on the back of his cape. He's got the annoying tech string, and he's got kind of like black ribbing on the sides and his back. We'll put pictures up on the site. But it's kind of an interesting costume, but probably a little bit more complicated than it needs to be. But Henry Cavill, British actor, with the squiffy bouffant, it looks pretty pumped.
Yeah, he looks very...
manly.
Very- Quite the hottie, I would say. You know,
yeah, I would
say. He has a physique I am envious of.
Yes.
But and he's got the hair. I reckon the hair's perfect.
I'm envious of the hair.
In the face, he actually looks pretty spot on. Like, I look at his... yeah, so it doesn't look too bad. And, you know, as with all things costume, we're judging these from set photos in motion and under, you know, lighting and so forth. We, who knows, it may be the most spectacular vision yet.
That's worthy of the poster.
Who knows? Anything can happen. Superman,
yes.
Which one is this? Superman, the Vision
of
Super. Okay, all right. So, what is this number seven? Number eight?
There was Superman 4, The Quest for Peace, and then there was Superman Returns, so this will be number six.
Number six. Is that too many Superman movies, do you think?
Not enough. Six films since 1978. That's not enough, my lad.
Okay. And just speaking of film franchises, I saw the box office numbers of the new Conan the Barbarian movie the other day.
Okay, yes.
So it had a $90 million budget, and it's made $15 million so far, I think, worldwide.
Ouch.
Yeah, and it's been out.
Was it really that bad? I mean, he's a good character. He's got fans. It looks good. It's got hunky people in it. I don't understand why people didn't watch it.
It's honestly not as bad as some films which seem to do very, very well. But it was a bit. I guess people just weren't really feeling the whole Conan thing. I don't know. Maybe people aren't in the mood for these kind of sword and sorcery things. The Lord of the Rings kind of backwash has died down, and now nobody cares again about Viking-y kind of and things and medieval warfare and that kind of thing.
I did read an interesting article on by one of the writers, Sean Hood.
Do tell.
And he wrote about why his feelings about the Conan flop. And it's actually pretty interesting. Again, I'll put a link on the site. But, yeah, it's quite it's a rather lengthy piece, but it is quite interesting. It gives you quite an honest insight. Usually the only one he's honest about Hollywood workings is filmmaker Kevin Smith. So to read this guy's account of the kind of flop of Conan and why it's a flop,
yeah,
and what he had to do with it is pretty interesting, actually. So I'll put a link to that on the site as well.
It's interesting that you bring up Kevin Smith as an example of like honesty in Hollywood. Isn't he the one who, like, if some critic gives him a bad review, he'll never invite them to a screening for anything ever again and then badmouth them in public?
I haven't heard that, but he badmouths everybody.
Yeah, he's kind of shameless, isn't he? He's
And that's why people love him.
Do they?
And he gets kicked off of planes because he's
No,
hefty.
That's Gerard Depardieu. You
no,
heard about
this
that,
is Kevin
didn't you?
Smith. He got kicked off a plane recently.
Oh, they've got so much in common. You heard about that, didn't you? How he got so drunk and he pissed in the aisle.
Oh, yes. Is that what he did?
Yeah,
Wow.
he was intoxicated and he wanted to have a you know like
intoxicated Frenchman.
I know, shocking. And he wanted to have a pre-flight,
Urination.
Urination, you know, before the plane takes off, because then he gets performance anxiety, or the in high altitudes his bladder contracts or something. I don't know.
Oh yeah, we've all been there.
So the stewardess said, "No, Mr. Depardieu," and he goes, "I'm Monsieur Depardieu. You do not tell me what to do." And then he proceeded to whip out his wang and piss in the aisle.
I don't think that's a French term. But, okay.
Pissoir. No, piss is, that's a French word, because it's a pissoir, the thing you piss into.
I don't believe what you're telling me right now, but sure, let's go with it.
True facts, 100% true. You got any other news this week?
That's all I have.
Yeah, I don't really have anything. Which is great, because it means...
But I have been reading a lot of comics.
Really? Yeah, go for it. What do you got?
I've been reading the DC Retroactive 1990s books. I don't know if you're familiar with, probably not, but basically before the DC Universe, the new universe started, DC wanted to give a bit of a nostalgic nod to their fans, so they did a series of one-shots set in the 70s, 80s and 90s.
Okay.
And as much as possible, they tried to get those original creative art teams back. So Batman, Green Lantern, Flash, JLA, Wonder Woman, they all had their own kind of one-shots. And the Batman one, which is awesome, which by Alan Grant and Norm Breyfogle, who you probably grew up...
Oh, that is a classic team. Wow. Okay.
...reading as well as I did. Yeah, yeah. That's just so awesome. They just don't make comics like these days. I'm enjoying these 90s comics so much. The Superman one was written by Louise Simonson, and the Green Lantern one was awesome. And, and each one reprints a classic tale from that era as well. And the thing that struck me is a lot of these... back in the day, like Batman was kind of fighting, like the backup tale in the 90s, he was basically just fighting gangsters who were kind of involved with the sanitation of Gotham. but it's a really interesting story. But today,
he only fights serial killers.
Normal people, yeah. They've always got to be weird and freaky and violent origins. But if you grew up reading comics in the 90s, as I did, then I heartily recommend, still on the shelves, picking up any of the DC retroactive one-shots. They're nice and thick, and it's great to see, Alan Grant and Norm Breyfogle back on Batman, and the colouring really makes them pop.
Yeah, I can't think of the last Alan Grant comic I read. Is he's still working, isn't he?
Yes, I guess he's doing... stuff for 2000 AD again, maybe.
I'm thinking that, or he's doing some creator-owned stuff. I just can't place it in my head. Like, he was, I remember, yeah, like his comics, let's see, he did an Arkham Asylum one, I seem to remember. He introduced Mr. Zazz, didn't he? That was his character.
I believe so, and I think Ventriloquist and Scarface as well might be his, which feature in this retroactive one-shot.
I really, really like Ventriloquist and Scarface, and... I know a lot of people don't, but I think it's a really fun character. And very,
he's an unusual character because a lot of other characters, as I said before, are quite violent and vicious and over the top, but these characters are quite fun, and I always, whenever they were in the animated series.
Oh, those episodes were great.
So cool.
Yeah. I love that bit where Batman still isn't sure whether Scarface is alive or if this guy's crazy or if he's just pretending to, be crazy or what. And then the doll moves its head slightly and then Batman goes, ah! And then he catches his wits. But it's like, yeah, that's the reaction. It's like, is Scarface alive? But they've changed the ventriloquist now. Isn't it a chick?
No, it's a guy. Oh, yeah. Well, not in this 1990s one, but yes, there was a ventriloquist. But very short-lived. I don't know if she... I think she might have died. But, yeah, there was a female ventriloquist, I think, a couple of years ago.
Okay. So we can add that to the women in refrigerators list then.
Well, she wasn't a love interest. She was a baddie. But there's also been, there was a female Dr. Octopus and...
Oh, what? Really? Yeah. Was she wearing his... Eight claws?
Well, a more sexy version of his, and she was like a scientist.
It's like how She-Hulk isn't anything like the Hulk except for powers. You know, she's just a sexy lady who happens to be green. like something from Star Trek or, you know.
I find She-Hulk probably one of the most attractive superheroes.
She's a big woman, like tall.
She is.
I like that. Lustrous, verdant green hair.
Verdant. It's a word you don't hear much.
You know, I've been using it a lot lately. I feel
better. You've been reading Swamp Thing?
No, but I feel a lot better about myself, you know, throwing in fancy words. I feel
as
like
well you should.
I'm smarter than you. I'm so sorry. I'll try not to do that anymore.
No, please. I think we should bring a erudite vocabulary. You know another word I like? Hirsute.
What does that mean?
Hairy.
Oh, really? Like hirsute?
No, H-I-R-S-U-T-E.
A word that I don't know what it means, but I'm going to pretend that I do, well, I did until right now, is I think it was Jenny on the Facebook extra sequential site, which you should all like if you haven't already. She mentioned she read The Widening Gaia just because Kevin Smith, yes. Mentioned Kevin Smith earlier. What is a Gaia? And not the spirit of the Earth from Captain Planet.
That's a different spelling, but I think a Gaia in oceanography is any large system of rotating ocean currents. But I think The Widening Gaia is actually based on a poem or something. I think it's a novel of a poem, if I'm not mistaken.
That's how well read we are.
I never actually thought of it, actually, when the book came out. I was like, oh, okay, that's a funky title.
It does have I guess if it means like things are...
Oh, here we go. Thank you, Wikipedia. It's the first line of a Thomas Yeats poem called The Second Coming. Yeats? Let's talk about comics.
All right. I'm ready to get into our feature topic, if you are.
Let me put on my wading boots and my trusty overcoat and dive right... I don't know. Sure, why not?
For a comics reference, let me eat my rarebit and hop into bed.
That would be from Little Nemo in Slumberland or something.
Same writer, yep, Dreams of the Rarebit Fiend. There you go.
Okay.
Yeah. Rarebit is toasted cheese. That's another fancy word for you folks.
Wow.
Yeah, I know. All right, special topic.
So we thought I should actually kick off. A friend of mine, Mark, also a listener of the show, emailed me a couple of weeks ago and asked me if there's any Mad Max comics. And I said, that's actually an interesting question. And at the top of my head, I said, I don't believe there are. And I was right. Mm-hmm. But I thought if there were any Mad Max comics, I'd imagine there would be probably some adaptation based on probably the third film, because that was the most successful one in the franchise in America.
Really? Wow.
The one with Tina Turner in it.
I guess it's because by that point everyone had seen The Road Warrior on VHS or on TV repeats, so that makes sense. It's the rule of how Spider-Man 3 did so well in theatres because Spider-Man 2 was good.
Yeah.
And then if there was a Spider-Man 4, which there will be, they have to reboot because the third one was so bad that they're worried about repeat.
No, the third one was bad, yes, you're right.
Okay.
The interesting thing about Mad Max, when the first film aired in America, I think they put subtitles on it. This might be one of those urban legend things.
Really?
Because this was quite late 70s, early 80s, and the Australian films just weren't international.
Hmm.
And there were fears that they couldn't understand the Australian accent.
That's annoying, considering here in Australia we... there's a lot of shows with like Southern American state accents. And
yes,
I can't
but we're
those.
Bombarded with that kind of stuff. So we've all grown up watching American TV, whereas they haven't grown up watching anything Australian.
They saw Crocodile Dundee, I'd imagine.
Oh, yes, but that was like mid-80s, but Mad Max, the first one, was early 80s.
And for his slang, I think Paul Hogan has very good elocution. Like you can understand him pretty well.
That's true.
Maybe we're fooling ourselves.
So comics we want to see.
Oh, right,
basically.
Yeah.
So we thought Mad Max, and I thought, well, Mad Max, that would actually be a good comic. There's actually a lot of kind of dystopian future comics out there, but I think a Mad Max comic, and they're trying to make the film again, starring Tom Hardy, Bane, who plays Bane in the Batman film. Haven't you heard about this? Yeah, they tried to do Mad Max 4, with Mel Gibson for like the last Mad Max 10 or something, years.
Wasn't it?
And was going to film it. It's going to film in Africa, and the original director was coming back, and then Mel.
Oh my.
Went nutso and stuff. So I think this is still a reboot or something. So comics that we'd like to see. So I thought.
Yeah.
What did you think? What we could talk about today.
All right. Yeah, this was an interesting challenge because it's
indeed.
Like in those little moments in life, you can see something pops up and you go, oh, that'd make a great comic. Or there's a TV show that's cancelled too early, or like Buffy, you know, and that's continued in comic form. And that got me thinking, you know, of other shows like that. But, I mean, I've got a couple of specific examples, but in broad terms, like, you know, I've got ideas, man. I got ideas. I want to see how the, you know, how in general things could change and when, why, what kind of comics I would buy. Cause even if it's like a license I love, I might not pick it up if it was done badly. Like if a Mad Max comic was done really pathetically, I still wouldn't read it. Does that make sense?
Yes. It does have to be done right, of course.
Yeah. So everyone take these suggestions with a grain of salt. So if they do suddenly release a Sister Act comic. Actually, Blue Water Comics would
probably... Hey, that's another... didn't Whoopi Goldberg play Gaia?
Yeah, it occurred to me at the time, but I was like, I'd ruin the flow of the show if I threw this in now. I really like Whoopi.
I just brought the flow back like Gerard Depardieu on a transatlantic flight.
Do not tell Gerard Depardieu what to do. Yeah.
Okay, what's your first one?
Oh, right. Well, the first one that really occurred to me was, I'm a fan of a show called Carnivale, which...
Oh, of course, yes.
Which aired from 2003 to about 2005. And that was a HBO show. It follows a kind of a traveling circus and freak show in kind of in the Great Depression, Dust Bowl era in the United States. Yep. And it's kind of like an impression of that period, but it's also following this... like this wandering penniless laborer and this priest who have both been possessed by like these spirits of good and evil, and they've been given these powers, which one of them can cure or heal all wounds and the other one can control people. And there's, you know, the good endless battle of good versus evil, and it's framed in this really unique setting. And the story keeps adding more and more complexity, like, oh, is she his daughter? You know, all that kind of drama. And the second season finishes rather abruptly with this really intense last episode and a cliffhanger in which something happens to one of the major characters. That's vague enough, right? That's
not a spoiler. Something happens.
Spoilers. So even at that time, the creators, Daniel Nauf, I think is the name of the series showrunner, they were still really unsure whether they were going to get a third season, and they had visioned like six seasons. And you can see it like in the way the show is paced, and to finish after two was shocking for me. And I was frantically looking around once that season finished, like, please let there be more. And the series is finished in a similar way. Deadwood, I don't want to see done as a comic, but that's another one that got cancelled too early. Did you ever watch Carnivale?
Yeah, my brother actually got me onto the first season, and I actually quite enjoyed it because there was something that wasn't... I think I just got it on DVD, which is how I pretty much watch all my TV shows these days, including Buffy and Angel, which I love.
Yeah.
But I haven't read any of the comics, actually, funnily enough. And yeah, I did really enjoy it. I don't think I've watched the second season, though.
Mm. It's a really beautifly filmed show, I think, is the thing.
It is. It's very good looking. And it's pretty, like you say, it was one of those, it was from a few years ago when kind of like dramas now are kind of all the rage.
Yeah.
But back then that was kind of one of the first ones. And the when you mentioned the creator's name, Daniel Nauf, he's actually written comics.
Really?
He wrote, him and his son Charles, wrote a few issues of Iron Man years ago.
It's so possible that it could happen. Like... if they got the likeness rights to Nick Stahl and Clancy Brown of Highlander fame.
And he also was the voice of Lex Luthor in all the DC animated series.
I really like Clancy Brown. He's in so much stuff, and he never really gets like the spotlight, does he? Except in Carnivale, he gets the spotlight, and he He revels
but I like
in
this
it.
Rights might not be in this. I mean, Ghostbusters has been in comics for years.
Oh, yeah. Changed how they look a little bit, yeah.
Yeah, they've never looked like Bill Murray and Harold Ramis.
Harold Ramis especially.
So forth. Even in the cartoons as well. And IDW are just launching a new Ghostbusters series, I think, this month, September. But yes, when you mentioned Carnivale TV series that have been cancelled, there have been quite a few, as you said. Another one that sprung to mind for me was a series which I don't know if you recall, which I know you like Prisoner. This is kind of similar, I guess, called Nowhere Man.
Nowhere Man.
Is that ringing the bells? No?
Tell
okay.
me more.
I think there is actually a comic, an independent comic called Nowhere Man, but it's nothing coming out soon, but it's nothing to do with the TV series. But it's starring Bruce Greenwood, who he's one of those, he played Captain Pike on the Star Trek.
Okay.
The J.J. Abrams film. He's got those face that you see everywhere. But you go, like, where do I know that guy from?
Yeah, he basically JFK in that other film.
Yeah.
Yeah.
it only aired for one season. And I don't know if it was supposed to go on for more or whatnot. But I do remember I guess it probably been a bit ahead of its time because it was a big story arc over a big season, over a whole season. I don't know if before that TV series really did that. I guess, yeah, The Prisoner would have, I guess, rather
no,
than
they
that.
Didn't have a big arc. It was still episodic. I think shows were really episodic until what's it like a big mini series like V when that first aired? Like,
yes, true.
What was that, like 82, 83?
Something like that.
And when was Nowhere Man?
95 to 96. So I guess in the X-Files era, where X-Files had kind of big arcs, but also the occasional kind of Dunny One episode. And there have been X-Files comics, I think.
Have you read any of them? They're by Topps, I think.
I don't think there's been any. I do remember picking them up when they first came out, when the TV series was still going, but I don't think there's been anything recently.
Yeah, I've read a few. They're pretty decent from what I remember. Like, they get the tone of the show pretty spot on. It's not an action comic by any stretch of the imagination.
Right.
Yeah.
So Nowhere Man was basically, I mean, I don't know if it could work as a comic because the story is kind of, it's almost finished, I guess, in the last episode. The concept behind it is quite interesting. Basically, it's this guy is a photojournalist. Him and his wife are driving in road. He goes into a bar, like a truck stop, like a toilet, a restroom, as they say over there. When he comes out, his wife doesn't know who he is, and she like drives off without him, and she's like pretending not to recognize him. His best mate ends up dead. He's out of GM card, where basically his existence has kind of been erased. It's also Liam Neeson did a similar film recently called Unknown, which has kind of got a similar kind of thing, like, why don't you know who I am, you know, that kind of story. So, and basically, it turns out that there's this big conspiracy behind a photograph he took in South America that's got basically four dudes hanging from a tree, and there's the FBI and CIA involved and all this kind of thing. But I remember at the time thinking this is quite intense, and there's obviously the people behind this are quite smart, and they know exactly what they're doing in mind. I think something like that could work as a comic. The good things about comics is obviously TV is tied to budget.
Yes.
And TV can be dated quickly.
I think that's why Carnivale got cancelled, because of the budget, not because of
the dating. Carnivale was pretty expensive going by the looks of it. So this is something I think could work. Again, it's not one of those action-packed series, but I think comics are so good at building mythologies. They've got time to play with, assuming that they're successful, of course. Otherwise, you'll be in the same show that the TV series will end up in. There's also, off the top of my head, a TV show called American Gothic.
I remember this. Yeah.
Which I very loosely remember thinking it was awesome. And again, that's something that my brother and I kind of used to watch together. And I think it was kind of around the same era, around the same 1990s, yes, 95 to 96,
I think it was
apparently
either a little bit after or the same time as Twin Peaks, and I think it had a similar vibe to that. It wasn't following a murder, but it was like a weird town with weird going-ons, but it had more of a... Yeah, that's similar to Carnivale in some ways, because there was like the devil was the sheriff in the town, wasn't he?
Yeah.
Lucas or something was his name.
Yeah, he's got... Yeah, Lucas Buck, and it's got... Yeah. People that, like, the son, the main kid was an actor called Lucas Black, who was in the third, I think, Fast and Furious, Tokyo Drift. he was the main guy in that, if memory serves me correctly, and it's got a whole bunch of other people. But yeah, it's one of those kind of spiritual, supernatural kind of weird, and yeah, executive produced by Sam Raimi and Robert Taper, the guys who did Xena in the Spider-Man films.
See, yeah, so, American Gothic was a really great show. I think, did that ever have an ending?
I don't.
I think I need to borrow that on DVD if it's been released.
Yeah, I don't recall ever actually seeing it even on DVD. Maybe it just hasn't been released.
Well, they've been getting around to all sorts of stuff now. I saw Earth 2.
Was a good show.
See, I only ever saw little bits and pieces of it, and now I want to watch it, and it's just been released on DVD.
Yeah, that was like a sci-fi where a bunch of astronauts get stranded on a planet or something.
Yeah, like I think they land on either on the wrong planet or the wrong side of the planet or something, and there's already aliens there where they want to colonize, and that's bad.
I do remember it being having a very pretty cast, lots of hunky men. And
that's
hunky,
funny because, as I mentioned, Clancy Brown, he had longish hair then, and looking at the cover and the way it's pitched, he looks like he's supposed to be like a 90s hunk. But it's Clancy Brown.
But people allowed you to be a hunk.
Before we move on too far, and this is just a little side topic, but I guess it counts kind of as news. And speaking of Lucas being the devil, have you seen the changes to Star Wars being done for the Blu-ray?
Yes, I thought we'd discuss that tonight. I don't know if it's an April Fool's joke or something.
Yeah, they've been confirmed by Lucas by Lucasfilm since. So
the only ones I've seen, these are the Blu-rays coming out in a couple of weeks, and we'll be doing our Star Wars episode with a special guest. Yes. But the two clips that I've seen on Ain't It Cool News are when Darth Vader picks up the Emperor.
No.
And throws him down, where before he just did it, that's when the Emperor is zapping Luke Skywalker again, put up links.
An amazingly emotional scene, you know, like nobody's saying anything, you just hear Luke screaming. And then Darth, like, he's got this inner turmoil, he's not talking, so he can't tell what's going on. He picks the Emperor up, and, you know, the Emperor's screaming. And, yeah, it was an amazing scene, you know, part of my childhood. And what did they add, Chris?
They added the same kind of vocal performance when Darth Vader was first created in Episode 3.
Yeah.
Revenge of the Sith, and he rises on the table like Frankenstein and is told that Natalie Portman is dead.
Padme has died in childbirth.
No! they basically added two no's with many o's when he picks up the Emperor.
One's like a no, and then the next one's no!
it's laughable, and I don't know what drugs Lucas is on, but his assistant needs to lock his...
Well, clearly that's a case of them, you know, wanting to do that at the time in 1983, but the technology just wasn't available to them to record the word no. So that was always part of his vision, you know, but he just couldn't realize it at the time. Just like they've added blinking eyes to the Ewoks, which I frankly, that doesn't bother me at all, even though it's a little bit eerie after seeing the Ewoks for so many years now, their eyes actually move, so they don't look like plush toys anymore.
Yes.
Well, they still do, but, you know. And what else have they added? You know the scene where R2 and C-3PO approach Jabba's big gate door thing, and the eyeball comes out and goes, "Oh, Jabba Chuta!" And, yeah, but they made that door 50 times bigger. I don't know why. They just did. And it looks really like bad CGI, like the rest of the prequel series. It's just a whole bunch of little things, but they've added more X-Wings to like the final battle over Endor, little things, but they didn't fix the TIE fighters disappearing out of, you know, and reappearing in frame, like out of position, you know, like these old errors from the fans have been joking about since the 80s. Darth Vader's lightsaber still looks like it's pink.
Yes.
I could fix that for them in After Effects. Like, it would be so easy. Just pay me $1 billion. I'll do it, George. Sorry, back to the topic.
We have to talk about this at some point.
What are your opinions on these changes?
I'll watch them on Blu-ray. I think there's so much nostalgia, and especially with us as comics fans, we are a nostalgic bunch, and we've got so much love for Star Wars just tied up that it's hard to... It's perhaps the only film franchise that you can't view at an emotional distance.
Yeah, I understand that. But it's like,
But these changes are pointless, yes.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a nostalgic connection to E.T. at all. Like, that film was not a part of my growing up. I don't think I even liked it as a kid. But yes. Even I, like, as an adult, I thought it was pretty dumb, the new CG E.T. scenes and swapping out all the guns for walkie-talkies. You know, all the strange
changes. I didn't even know that. Really?
Really? Okay. Yeah, you should look it up. For the theatrical re-release of E.T., I think, what was it, 2000? About the same time as when George released Star Wars as in theaters again. That was like 97, so we probably would have been around that time. Yeah, digitally replaced guns with walkie-talkies.
Why?
I don't know. They didn't want it to be too menacing a situation for small children. I don't know. This from the man who produced Gremlins, which is ostensibly aimed at children.
That's a pretty scary movie, actually. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, let's talk about comics.
Oh, right, yeah. What are we doing? That's right,
There's a bunch of 80s, talking about nostalgia, there's a bunch of 80s cartoons that I would love to see return to comics in some form or another. And I've always told my nephews and nieces and people of my era that the cartoons around today just aren't the same. So we grew up on Thundercats, which is, there was 130 episodes done between 85 to 1990. Marvel published a bunch of comics in the 1980s, and then Wildstorm took over in the early 2000s. Apparently, Warner Brothers now own them. I'd like to see Thundercats you'd be familiar with, Lion-O, Chitara. I think we talked about these guys briefly in our feline-focused episode. My. It's just kind of a really quite a lush, realised fantasy world, a nice melding of fantasy and sci-fi of these kind of cat warriors beating up Mum-Ra and his villainous goons. And that's we know the TV series now, the manga-influenced TV series is the relaunch of Thundercats is now back on.
That looks pretty good from what I've seen.
It looks pretty good. Hopefully we get it in Australia very soon. So I'd like to see that back in comics because I think that's a property ripe for development.
Absolutely. I think there's numerous ways to spin that off and write side stories and all sorts of quests. Because it wasn't a show I grew up on, but it seems like it was fairly, as you mentioned, fleshed out in terms of the setting. It wasn't just like a G.I. Joe thing. They weren't just a team of guys who stop evildoers. He was a prince or something, wasn't he? Or was he?
Yeah, he was a kind of like a, I think he was like a kid in a kind of adult body, and he had to grow up fast and lead these troopers. But there was one episode where I remember where they're on this planet and these two ships who are fighting each other crash land on their planet, the Thundercats planet, not the planet that they found themselves on. And there's like a big black armored kind of guy, and then there's like a white guy who looks very nice and friendly. And so they start shooting and attacking the one in black, but it turns out that he's the good guy and the guy in white's the bad guy. And there's like little things like that, little morals. You don't really get the morals.
They learnt to not be racist in that episode, shooting at the black man, when it was actually the white man who was stealing the television.
Don't trust white.
Keeping it
Cat's taught me.
Keeping it in space, unless if you had anything further on Thundercats.
Many. Back you going.
Okay. Now, I've been on my Star Trek binge. I've only just started on Deep Space Nine, so there's so many good seasons of Star Trek yet awaiting me. And I know IDW has had the Star Trek license for a little while now, at least a few years, and they've been putting out comics sort of tying into the new franchise with like the rebooted one, which is good, but it's not very Star Trek-ish. Maybe you'd agree.
I think the writers, the screenwriters of that Star Trek film are helping with the IDW's continuation of the film continuing in their comics.
I meant like the new movie kind of world. It doesn't seem Star Trek-y. It seems more action movie-ish.
It's certainly more action-packed than any previous Star Trek films. But absolutely. I've got a soft spot for the 80s films. They're awesome.
You know, I've been working my way through those. I just saw the first one a couple of weeks ago.
That's the worst one.
You think so? Because honestly, I watched The Wrath of Khan and then that one. And if I'm being honest, I prefer the first one.
That's out of order. What are you doing? You're going backwards.
It does not matter, does it? Well, like, I won't watch like The Search for Spock until I've seen Wrath of Khan.
Yeah, 2, 3, 4, they're all kind of tied into each other.
And I've already seen the whale one.
That's number 4, the voyage home.
I love the bit where they're on the bus And oh, there's yes. some unruly youngin, and then yes.
playing punk music on his ghetto blaster.
I can't remember if he threatens him, but that's a great scene. People should watch that film. It's actually a really funny comedy starring our lovable friends from Star Trek. It's really good. It's a fun film. But yeah, I was going to say, you know, there have been Star Trek comics, quite a few. It's a license which had many spin-offs, cartoons, all that business. But I'd kind of like to see a spin-off based around new characters. I know there was a, like, it's like something
Starfleet
new
Frontier. Academy?
Sorry? I was going to say there's like some of the video games like are set on a new ship, and I think some of the novels, which I haven't read, they've made up new characters and they've got their own kind of thing going on.
Yeah, but Star Trek New Frontier, Peter David has basically just created most of those characters. I think he's written like a dozen or so books, and I actually read the first one only a few months ago, actually.
What do you think?
It was good. It's got Captain Picard and Spock kind of feature in it, but it's well written, and he's basically can tell that he's creating a whole new mythos of cast and crew and of this new Enterprise kind of ship. And yeah, the main the captain's got a scar on his face, and he's kind of like a Han Solo ex kind of rogue scoundrel, but he's like the captain.
I might have to check those out. Character.
Yeah, I've got the first two books. I picked them up. I mean, they've been around since the 90s.
Oh, lend them my way.
I will. When are we going to see each other again? I never see you anymore.
Fans of Extra Sequential do not need to be privy to this conversation. it's gone a bit personal. Like, oh, what are you doing next weekend? Oh, I can. we'll do this after the show. But I get the feeling like there's so many other ships. There's other adventures to be had. They can make up new alien species like they did with Next Generation. And even though the Ferengi didn't turn out to be as impressive, they were meant to be the main villains of the whole Next Generation series. And then after their debut, people realized they were lame. So it's
which the Borg came along.
They made up the Borg and brought back the Romulans. I think they were in the original series as well. Yeah, I'm sure they were Romulans. But I kind of wish there was someone had the cojones to do a Star Trek series without any of the existing Star Trek characters and just sort of, give us something we haven't seen before.
Interesting.
Kind of like how Star Wars recently did that that series set, 2,000 years in the future with Luke Skywalker's great-great-great-grandson or whatever.
Oh, yeah, Dark Horse have quite a few different Star Wars series set hundreds of years before, hundreds of years after.
Yeah, just do that, and I think that would be amazing.
Yeah, that's not bad.
That's a dream project for me.
Going back to your 1980s cartoons, He-Man is an obvious one. He's had comics kind of scattered around, but nothing really substantial. Silver Hawks, I don't know if you would remember that, and also made by the same company that did Thundercats. They were basically, it's kind of like Thundercats, but they were like hawk and bird based, and they have really good toys.
Yeah, that's the key ingredient, I think.
Bionic 6, do you remember Bionic 6? Bionic 6.
You're such an old man.
We are a family. They're basically a multiracial family, and every member of the family had a different bionic kind of limb.
Yeah.
Had like this big, huge pet gorilla. There was supposed to be a comic series from New Comics, but it was never published.
I've never even heard of that publisher, New Comics.
Yeah, neither have I.
Short-lived, like Malibu Comics, do you remember them?
Yes, Marvel bought them and then did nothing with them.
Yeah, see, I only vaguely remember the name and a couple of, like, I don't think I'd even be able to remember any of the titles now. I didn't know Marvel bought them. There you go. Yeah.
I wanted to talk about something we briefly discussed last week off the air, which is you brought to my attention.
Really? Okay.
James Bond Jr.
Yeah, okay.
This was a cartoon. I don't really want to see a comic on it, but I want to talk about it because this is quite funny.
Yeah.
I didn't even know this cartoon existed.
Yeah, we should tell people. Our conversation went something along the lines of, oh, you know, how come there was never like a James Bond comic? And I said there was.
Oh, yes.
It's like a Modesty Blaze-ish kind of comedy comic, which is really awesome. And then I mentioned there's a Nintendo game called James Bond Jr., and then I think we both did a bit of wikiing. And
furiously.
Yeah, it's this whole franchise of James Bond Jr. He looks a bit like Wheeler from Captain Planet or something.
And he was the nephew of James Bond.
Oh, my.
And he fought the criminal organization known as Scum, S-C-U-M. And his catchphrase was Bond, James Bond.
Junior.
I love that.
Oh, my.
Marvel actually published 12 issues in 1992, so there you go.
Would he say things like, whoa, shaken, not stirred? You know, 80s characters all had these annoying voices.
Called everybody dude and had skateboards. Like that dog character at The Simpsons.
Like when he's getting shot at, whoa, dude's not cool. Guns are never fun. Or something.
This comic writes itself.
Yeah, and I'm sure there was a comic book. There was comic books of every 80s cartoon. But
New Kids on the Block had their own comic.
Great.
Yes.
I'd like to read that.
And KOTB. You know, something I also recently discovered, they're touring with the Backstreet Boys.
That is too much.
The poster of them has like 20 people.
That's too much post-teenage attitude for me to handle.
Perhaps you should just stick to Miley Cyrus singing that Nirvana song and you'll be happy.
I don't know if I can, yeah. It's probably better. I probably overload on bandanas and like bum fluff stubble. You know, they all had that, didn't they? They all wore bandanas.
Bandanas are also in.
I had a few more. I'm going to take things in a bit of a different direction just for mine, because I was thinking, I'm a huge fan of Asterix and Obelix, and I've always, the books like now come out pretty disparately, just one every like 7 years or something. And Uderzo's getting quite elderly and his stories are making less sense and kind of stupid.
He's kind of like a European Alan Moore.
European Frank Miller? No, he's not that crazy. Just kind of out of touch, maybe? I don't know. Like, he just doesn't have any good stories left in him. And I would love to see the series continued by a new writer-artist team in the same sort of vein as Spirou continued on after the original introduction. That's changed hands many times, and it's continued to be a great comic. And I just wish Asterix and Obelix would do that. Maybe illustrated by Mobius.
Nice one. Yeah, you're talking. Even I'd buy that.
Yeah, exactly, right?
A couple of other films I thought could be interesting. Neverending Story as a comic.
Oh, yeah. Good
directed
idea.
By Wolfgang Peterson, who also went on to direct Troy.
Now, I hope you're not suggesting this as like a dark Neverending Story, like they do a dark Wizard of Oz and a dark...
No, but I think back in those days, they had the nice belt. Like, there was a few films around, like there was Labyrinth starring David Bowie.
Yeah, and Jennifer...
Lopez.
Connolly.
Right. Yes. There's also Dark Crystal, which is going to be an upcoming series from Arkea, and you might have seen these Dark Crystal story in this year's FCBD offering, Free Comic Book Day. Mm-hmm. So I think films like that, which today kids kind of films, they kind of lost the darkness and they've just got talking inanimate objects.
Yeah.
The Neverending Story was awesome.
I mean, certain things have darkness. I think in Toy Story 3, there's a bit where it seems like they're all going to get incinerated.
That is true. Yes.
There's various. And yeah, did you watch How to Train Your Dragon?
Yeah, I did. I actually quite enjoyed it.
That's a good film. And at the end, there's a downbeat. I don't want to spoil it, but do you remember what happens right at the end?
I don't.
Okay. Well, anyone who maybe remembers the film or seen it more recently should remember something that happens to the main character that you don't expect, and it's this kind of bittersweet.
Oh, yes, he loses.
Hey, no spoilers.
I didn't say what.
Okay, no spoilers, because I actually think people should see this film if they haven't, because it's actually pretty good.
It is good. Generally, I don't watch CGI kind of kids' films, but that was quite good.
Huh. We're too adult for that. Back to... cartoon comics. My list here is, like, I've got a lot of broad things. Like, I've always wanted to see Marvel and DC rolled into one publisher and one universe. Now, let me finish. Let me finish. All right.
They've both out the blood.
They've both absorbed so many other publishers. You know, all these other characters. Let's see, The Question. like the Charlton characters have been absorbed into DC. As you mentioned, Marvel bought Malibu Comics and Malibu's amazing roster of heroes, which none of us can remember.
Prime was one.
Ah, very good.
Which is kind of like a more muscular Shazam where a kid becomes a hero.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I guess Marvel. Did Marvel used to own Shazam? Captain Marvel?
No, Fawcett Comics in the 40s, and then DC sued them because they said it was too close to Superman, and then I think Fawcett went bust, and DC brought Captain Marvel anyway.
Yeah, because Captain Marvel is one of those ones where I've had people try and can tell me that he belongs to Marvel, and he's like their
manager. It's basically DC can't advertise him or use a comic with Captain Marvel. Because Marvel also have a character called Captain Marvel. So whenever you see Captain Marvel in a DC comic, it's always called Shazam.
Well, why haven't they been sued by the creators of Gomer Pyle?
I guess you can't copyright a catchphrase.
You can copyright everything. You can copyright your name, like Harlan Ellison did.
Captain Marvel was around in the 30s and 40s, so that was probably before the TV series.
Fair enough. But it just seems inevitable to me that one day, maybe 30 years down the line, like, say, Disney and Time Warner will cut some deal and Marvel and DC won't have a say and they'll be rolled into one thing. And then comics nerds who want to bitch about which one's better, DC or Marvel, can STFU. I don't want to say what that stands for.
Well, both those publishers do own something together.
Oh, let's see. Is this a quiz? Yeah. Give me hints.
Oh, I can't really. It's a word. It's a word that both of the companies use on a regular basis.
Does Superman still say Great Scott? Is that the
word? Not these days.
Okay, it's not that. Is it Lobo? No,
they own the word superheroes.
Are you kidding? No one else can use the word superhero?
Correct.
That seems illogical, Captain.
I think I'm quite right in saying that.
Oh, my. Oh, God. What do you think of my plan of rolling these two together?
I think it's ridiculous and I won't stand for it.
But you'll buy every 52 issues. Yep, sorry.
It's interesting if, you know, if we become like a Blade Runner future and it's ruled by conglomerates, but I can't see that happening.
What about like a magical world where rifts have all, you know, the walls have been torn down, East and West Berlin pushed together, DC and Marvel, David Hasselhoff's there playing a song, everyone's happy, a new renaissance of superhero, characters can thrive.
Man. I like that world, but I can't see it happening in our lifetime. You know, a few other comics I'd like to see.
Yeah.
And in case people are wondering, as they're getting nostalgic as we're going through this list, there's a Buckaroo Banzai comic from Moonstone, Banzai.
What the hell is that? Starring
Peter Weller, who was Robocop. You don't know what Buckaroo Banzai is. Banzai.
You can't even say it. How do you know what it is?
Banzai. He's like a guitarist, astrophysicist, rocket scientist, and Jeff Goldblum's in it, and it is like the wackiest, wildest movie of the 80s.
Really?
And it's got the greatest theme song. You have to Google this when we finish recording.
I can imagine the Jeff Goldblum bit. Buckaroo, Banzai. That's how he talks, isn't it?
Very much so. There's been two miniseries involving the BB creator, Mac Roush. So, Buckaroo Banzai, a wonderful film. You should definitely check it out. Also, if you're feeling nostalgic, a couple of years ago, Marvel produced a series called Forever. They did an X-Men Forever, which is two miniseries published in 2009, 2010, written by Chris Claremont. Chris Claremont and Jim Lee created the 1991 X-Men series. Then Chris Claremont left. He was the writer. He left after 1991 because Jim Lee wanted to take it somewhere else. And Jim Lee was just a superstar penciler at that stage, so Marvel decided to decide with the artist rather than the writer, which is something they don't really do so much these days.
So Chris did not agree with all the pouches?
Chris didn't agree with the decisions that Jim Lee wanted to take the story as he left, but now He returned, and basically Marvel created this kind of Forever, so X-Men Forever miniseries that picked up where he left off in this kind of alternate universe. And they did the same again with Louise Simonson, who wrote X-Factor for 5 years, starting from 1986, and she had a five-issue miniseries called X-Factor Forever, which I had because X-Factor was one of the first series I grew up writing. Reading.
You're a liar. You didn't write X-Factor.
I didn't.
You're like a crazy man on the internet.
So there are comics out there for the nostalgic.
Saying these are dreams that have come true.
They're dreams that have come true, yes.
Yeah.
Something I'd also like to see, Peter David wrote Hulk for 12, 13 years, starting in 1987. He wrote it for years and years. He basically created the kind of multiple personality Hulk. So he had the Grey Hulk. It was Joe Fixer. It was like a Las Vegas tough guy enforcer.
Right.
Some of the Hulk series that he did were just absolutely awesome. He created a whole bunch of great characters like the Maestro, who was basically a future version of the Hulk who was ruling in this dystopian future. I didn't read all of his run because that's 12 years worth, but I'm slowly catching up on it now in the trades that Marvel are doing. But it's kind of like a legend that I've known of for a while that Marvel, back, this is like the late 90s when the comics industry was just kind of not ruled by creative people like it is today, kind of ruled by accountants who didn't really have any knowledge of the business, and they basically wanted Hulk to go back to the Hulk smash that people knew from the TV series in the 70s and 80s. So they basically just gave him very short notice, and he had to write his last issue in just a hurry, which I think was Hulk number 467 in August of 1998, which was his 137th issue of Hulk. So after doing all these wonderful things, and I remember reading interviews with Peter David where Bobby Chase, who was his editor at the time, had to ring him up, and she was just in tears, like, they're kicking you off the book. You've got one issue to say goodbye to this character. And he had to tie up all these loose ends. So I'd like to see him carry on and to see kind of him return to the character and do what he wanted to do.
Yeah.
Like they did with the X-Factor and X-Men Forever.
I see. Yeah. I mean, if there's one positive thing we can take from this is that no comic publisher would ever again just reboot a series like that.
Well, at least they give you warning. That's what I'm trying to say. And I think, you've got Joe Quesada, who's the head of Marvel at the moment. He grew up as a independent writer and artist. You've got Dan Didio at DC, and even though people hate him, he actually, he is a writer who grew up in TV, and Geoff Johns and Jim Lee with him as well. So it's, I think the industry now is at a happy place where less so, certainly if you compare it to, say, Hollywood or TV or the music industry, you've actually got creative people running comics.
Yeah, it's true. It'd be nice if, I guess maybe, I just don't like some of the directions, but I see where you're coming from.
Of course.
Yeah. Of course.
It'll always be that way. Indiana Jones. I was watching, for some reason, Indiana Jones, Kingdom of the Crystal Skull on TV the other day.
Don't put yourself through that.
Hoping that it would be better than I thought. It actually wasn't that bad, for the first, half.
I thought it's pretty unwatchable, honestly.
There's CG monkeys and CG.
Like the first couple of scenes, there's CG gophers and.
I know, that was a bit weird. And I kept thinking, because I know they tried to make Indiana Jones since about the mid 90s, and there'd been a whole bunch of different scripts that both Steven Spielberg and George Lucas wouldn't agree on. And I would have loved to see one of those scripts come to pass. But anyway, there's references to him serving a World War II. I thought that would actually be a good comic.
Dude, have you watched any of the Young Indiana Jones Chronicles?
I have not. No, this is in World War II they're talking about.
Oh, wait, that was World War I, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Oh, of course, yeah.
There has been quite a few indie comics over the years, but they haven't really kind of flown like the Star Wars comics and Star Trek comics. They haven't really been successful. They've kind of been hit and miss.
It's odd how they never took off.
Yeah, so Marvel published adaptations of the first three films, then Dark Horse got the license in the mid-90s, and they did a bunch of miniseries. Apparently there's a Indiana Jones and the Fate of Atlantis video game.
Great game. Fantastic game. That's really good. Yeah.
Which I never played, but I thought you probably were. Was it a point-and-click PC kind of thing?
Yeah, in the exact same style as Monkey Island or Day of the Tentacle, you know, those kind of games. And damn, that game's got the best story. Yeah, they get all the vibe right here. He has a female sidekick who's quite funny and, you know, sassy, which is what you want.
Oh, yes.
Not screaming every 5 seconds.
No, I did like play Indiana Jones and the Emperor's Tomb on the Xbox, which came out about 5-6 years ago, and that was pretty awesome.
Yeah.
That was a really good game.
Just to keep things on with adventurers, sure. I've got one here. I want to see more Australian Phantom comics. Now, you might go, Phantom.
I think Phantom has a lot of potential.
It really does. Phantom, if anyone doesn't know, Australia is one of the few, along with Sweden.
Somewhere, yeah.
I think it's Sweden. Sweden, I think France, Italy, they were all publishing it for a while, but Australia's Fru Publishing has been publishing Phantom continuously.
New stories, yeah.
Well, I've kind of looked into it recently, and almost all of their stories have been reprints of like Swedish stories, which are usually kind of the best ones. I honestly think they're beautifully drawn, you know, they put the effort in. And I was shocked to find out there have only been four, count them, four out of I think 1,200 issues that Fru Publishing have put out of Phantom, which have been done by Australians. There was one which was like started but not completed because the artist died, and they were all written by Jim Shepherd, who's like the publisher of Fru Publishing, and they were drawn by the regular cover artists of the series, Glenn Ford and Keith Chatto. And Keith Chatto was the one who passed away, sadly. So it's shocking that only four Phantom issues have only ever been done by Australian writers, considering Phantom is something that Australian readers especially, I think it makes up a part of a lot of people's childhood, at least, you know, getting ripping into your show bag, finding a that's an Australian reference, don't even bother, American listeners, you have no childhood. Ripping into your show bag, reading that Phantom comic, you know, and then I'm shocked to realize how few of them were Australian.
I do remember there were, very briefly, I know DC publishers Phantom series, and I do remember even at one point when I was at art school in the 90s meeting the writer and artist of two Aussie guys who again did it was like a Phantom set in the future. Not Phantom 2040, the cartoon.
The one that Peter Chung did the designs for?
Peter Chung, Bobby or something else. Something else like that. But I think Moonstone, again, have published a few Phantom stories. And now, I think a few months ago, we talked about the last Phantom, the Alex Ross covers that Dynamite did. Which is kind of, Phantom, which I guess would be quite different from the traditional depiction of him. But, I think that's a character. There's so much potential and such a strong kind of mythic origin.
Yeah, it makes no sense to me. A mythic origin and us as Australians, people here have really latched onto, and the fact that, why is no one? Why, I guess it's cheaper for them to not hire an artist to draw a whole new issue. I just find it kind of sad and shocking and kind of surprising. And not that these in particular issues that were made by the cover artists were any good, because they're fairly average. One of them's a bit better than the others. There's one set in King's Cross station in Sydney.
Oh, really?
Yeah. They're fairly fun. You know, Phantom stories are pulp kind of stories anyway. But yeah, it just seems like a missed opportunity, and maybe one day someone will get things rolling with a proper new Australian one, because it seems right to me somehow.
Talking about kind of old heroes that deserve a new life, I briefly mentioned this to you in an email. And when the first League of Extraordinary Gentlemen came out, 1999, I think, it was kind of filled with possibilities. And me and my brother would kind of talk about, oh, that's an interesting idea, taking all these kind of literary heroes and kind of throwing them in as a team. The Phantom was in a team. Do you remember what team that was?
Mandrake the Magician. And...
yes, Defenders of the Earth.
There
was a cartoon in the '80s.
Yeah, I don't know who the other one is.
Flash Gordon was in there.
Really?
I think Flash's daughter. It didn't. In that cartoon, he had like the power of 10 tigers, and
they tried to define his powers a bit more. It's more like Tarzan, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
Funny you mentioned Tarzan, because I thought, it'd be interesting to see not Alan Moore and Kevin O'Neill, but other writers and artists doing League of Extraordinary Gentlemen,
mm-hmm.
because there's such a rich list of characters, not only from novels but pop culture, that you can kind of grab a hold of in different eras. So you could have like Lone Ranger or Tarzan or Captain Ahab from Moby Dick. You could have Victor Frankenstein. You could have Beast from Beauty and the Beast, Hunchback of Notre Dame, Scarlet Pimpernel. You could just go through all the decades and kind of like a miniseries like set in each decade and have all these kind of interesting characters. I'd like to see someone other than Alan Moore or Kevin O'Neill take on that very concept.
Because just I think play with concept, it, yeah, just go nuts with it. You know?
Yeah, it's pretty interesting.
Absolutely.
And I do remember last year, Comics Alliance, the website Comics Alliance, and comic websites love April Fool's Day jokes. And yeah. Last year they did an awesome one, which was the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen America 1988. And they had this little promo image.
I remember that, yeah.
It was pretty awesome. I'm just going to had like a little copy. This is the synopsis, if you like. When war hero turned handyman Kisugi Miyagi, who I think is Miyagi,
as a this one. Okay, now I remember the other ones. Yeah, go on.
Is found drained of blood, it becomes clear that the occult gang known as the Lost Boys, the Kiefer Sutherland vampire film, are targeting the only individuals that can stop them from complete domination of America. It's the perfect case for the League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, except that their government contract, Oscar Goldman, disbanded the team in 1979. Now disgraced scientist Emma Brown, from Back to the Future, has to put together a new team consisting of a newly resurrected vampire kingpin, Tony Montana, Scarface, transportation specialist Jack Burton, Kurt Russell in Big Trouble, Little China,
mm-hmm.
ex-commander B.A. Baracus, Mr. T, tech wizard Angus MacGyver, and the mysteriously powerful femme fatale known only as Lisa from Weird Science. So I thought the picture, again, we'll whack it on the website, is pretty cool. And all the comments are saying, yeah, how could you do this? Oh, I want to see this book so bad. There's just so much potential there. I think it's awesome. Funnily enough, there is a MacGyver comic coming out from Image next year.
Ooh, who do you know if anyone, any recognizable
the original showrunner, the original creator, he's co-writing the book, I believe. I think it's just going to be a miniseries.
Awesome.
But yeah, that'll be pretty good. League of Extraordinary Gentlemen has so much potential, so I'd be pretty curious to see some of the. I guess it would be hard because a lot of the characters that Alan Moore uses are kind of public domain.
Well, it's like it's people have been doing like similar stuff now. You got Abraham Lincoln, Vampire Hunter, you know, these kind of things. I guess people are picking up that ball and mashing things together, like our genre mashup episode we looked at a few episodes ago. And we reviewed League, the new League book. If you missed that, check that episode out as well. Pluggy plug. Got that out of the way. Yeah, I think there's a lot of space there. It's kind of a shame. I wish, yeah, that would be a dream thing if Alan Moore. What say does he really have? Couldn't they just say it's the team of wonderful individuals?
Yes.
Yeah, and
lasses.
And just use the exact same characters in his book. Surely you could. I guess it's the same rule as the guys who come out with those Transmorphers movies and, you know, the ones which are just different enough and the cover looks exactly like the other one to fool you into buying it. That, so it is legally it's a legal thing to do, you know. It might be a scummy thing to do. Blue Water Comics may be something for you guys to consider.
I did hear that the Ninja Turtles book that IDW have just done, the new Ninja, which is really good actually, just launched a couple of weeks ago.
Oh,
apparently there's different licensing issues and that can't be sold in England for some reason. So comic shops rather than the publisher is selling them to England.
Okay. It's probably one of those awkward book right things. I don't know.
What were you going to say before I really interrupted you about Ninja Turtles?
Nah, nothing important. But
one other thing I'd like to see is Ultimates Volume 3 by Mark Miller and Brian Hitch. The first two volumes of Ultimates, which was the ultimate streamlined universe of the Avengers, Captain America, Thor, Iron Man, whatnot, is an actually awesome comic, and we talked about this last week, as in being a pretty good comic to hand to new people. They did the first two volumes, so 24 issues, I think. And then they were supposed to do a third volume, but for some reason they didn't. And then Jeff Loeb and, the artist, penciler, Joe Madeira, who has been out of comics for a while, came back in with his manga style, and it was just completely out of whack as what the first two were.
Mm-hmm.
So Mark Miller kind of took his ideas for Ultimates 3 and transferred it to a series from DC called War Heroes, which kind of never took off the ground. I think only the first couple of issues were released and then kind of fell apart. But the first two versions of volumes of the Ultimates are absolutely awesome, and I'd like to see another one with those creators on board.
Fantastic. I've only got one more, and it becomes a website of the week almost, because we haven't done one of those in a year. But have you had a chance to look at, there's a gent called Tom Neely, who's a cartoonist. He did a comic recently called Doppelganger. It's a story about Popeye, you know, his famous saying, "I am what I am."
Yep.
He sort of goes on this psychological interior journey, like, "I am." And then he goes into like, "Oh, I think therefore I am," and then he starts fighting himself and many, many iterations of Popeye. It's really awesome, and like this metaphysical journey through the world of Popeye. But he was saying that he started a page on Facebook for trying to get himself the job as like the lead writer and artist for like a new Popeye comic.
Okay.
And that to me sounds like a dream, amazing project. He said a dude called Craig Yeo is saying that he's editing new Popeye comics and is looking for an artist. He's like, "I want to do it. I already drew my own surrealistic mini comic. I've got anchors tattooed on my arms, and I eat a lot of spinach because I'm vegan and it's delicious." And I want to see this. That seems perfect to me.
And I think Craig Yeo is actually one of the editors of Fantagraphics. His name's Anselmo.
That would make sense. Yeah. They've been putting out all the books of reprints of Popeye so far. So yeah, and the last thing for me is more of like a genre thing. I want to see more hard science fiction in comics. There's very little, a lot of space adventure.
What do you class as hard? Like
where the focus is
Blade Runner kind of stuff, or
Blade Runner's kind of approaching it like it implies a bit more seriousness, but more so sticking more to the science and the kind of the reality of things. So
Philip K. Dick, William Gibson.
William Gibson more so. Arthur C. Clarke, so, 2001, A Space Odyssey, hard science fiction. You know, the science makes sense. It's not Star Wars.
Yes. Oh, okay. Absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah. And there's very little of that. And considering how...
that's true.
Yeah, and it's kind of sad because there's so many good science fiction writers, and I'd love to, and especially Australian ones, and award-winning Australian science fiction artists, Sean Tan, who could draw some amazing science fiction comics. But yeah, that's all I had.
Also, I'd like to see more Elseworlds series. DC kind of finished it a few years ago, but that was where, Batman was like a vampire. Red Sun, where Superman bled in Russia, grew up as Russian. There was some awesome Elseworlds series that reimagined and reinterpreted, basically not as an ongoing series, but as a series of one-shots and miniseries. I used to love and just eat those things up like there's no tomorrow. DC haven't done that kind of thing for a while. Since we're talking about websites, Project Rooftop is worth visiting. It's basically a site devoted to costumes, but occasionally they'll put up proposals that artists do that then get knocked back for whatever reason from the publishers. And another website definitely worth looking at, if you want to Google Superman 2000, you'll find out that in 1998, Grant Morrison, Mark Waid, Mark Miller, and Tom Pyre, wrote this 20-page proposal to DC Comics to update the Superman franchise for the new millennium, as it was at that stage. So if you Google Superman 2000, you'll go to the website and you can read that original proposal for yourself. A lot of those ideas have been taken on board in the years since, but it's definitely worth reading as a kind of what could have been and kind of just as a behind-the-scenes peek, as in how comics are created. So loosely on that topic, I thought I should mention that.
Fantastic. Links for that will be on the website and hopefully for everything we mentioned. So if you're frantically trying to scribble something down, we'll try and cover everything for you because we love you. All right, that wraps up our topic, I think, unless if you had anything else.
That's it. If you have any comics that you'd like to see, please go on our Facebook page. Or you can email me, which is Chris with a K, Chris at extrasequential facebook.com. And as my lad said, yeah, join our Facebook page. It's always good to have some lively discussion with fellow aficionados of the sequential arch.
It's been an interesting topic, more than I expected, and we didn't even have time to touch on any of the kind of amazing artist-writer team-ups that we've both kind of dreamed on. I think we should save that for another show then.
Agreed.
You know, our own personal all-star comic. And next week's show, we won't be talking about all-star comic or anything like that. What kind of hint can we give?
R?
Is that there's a letter in the word, and the letter is R? Is that your hint?
Isn't that what poets say?
I see what you did. You gave it away.
Kind of a loose topic.
Okay, it's not pirates, people. Don't worry. We won't be talking about Watchmen pirates for an hour.
But I did notice something this week. There's I think it's from Top Shelf. It's called Pirate Penguin versus Ninja Chicken, and I thought that's like a crossover. That's like a nautical. That's like a chicken anthropomorphic. That like covers three different of our episodes in one. And I thought that was quite funny when I saw it.
Terrible.
But we're not going to talk about Pirate Penguin versus Ninja Chicken. We're going to be talking about nautical kind of adventurers and heroes.
Yes, the water. We will be getting our toes wet in that topic.
Good one.
Well, I should have said feet wet. That makes more sense. Ah,
toes are connected to your feet. You can't have one without the other.
I know. Yeah, that's a good point. See, I didn't screw up completely. I'm not an absolute failure.
So, yes, next week we're talking about kind of, water-themed. Because it's going to be International Talk Like a Pirate Day on the 19th of September, but we've got something else planned for that day, so we thought we'd talk about kind of, nautical adventures or comics based on or around or under the water. We talked about The Deep a few weeks ago. But we'll be talking about characters like Aquaman, Namor, the obvious ones, and also ones that you may not have heard of.
Yeah, I'll try and surprise you with some.
Please, I like surprises.
Snorkies. What are they called? Snorkels? Snorks?
Oh, that was a cartoon.
That's the sound of me Googling snorks.
They had like trumpet kind of noses or something.
Yeah, on top of their heads. There you go. Like snorkels.
Nice.
That's going to be my contribution to this week's topic while you tell me about Aquaman.
You'll be zoning out.
Oh, God. All right. More on that next week. Thanks for listening to us this week. You can get all our previous shows at extrasequential.com. You can also comment on them there. Friend us on Facebook. Drop us a line at chris@extrasequential.com with your fan mail. And we've received some lovely fan mail lately. And thanks to everyone who's been sending those in. It means
yes,
a lot.
It's been coming.
Yeah,
it
absolutely. It makes it all worthwhile.
Yeah.
I shouldn't sound so heartbroken.
No. Thanks for listening, everybody. Enjoy the rest of your spring. And we'll speak at 2 and maybe we do next week.
See you, folks.